Hey guys, and welcome to a brand new episode of Nerds Talk Movies. My name is Taylor, and I'm going to be your host today. Joining me for this episode is none other than Drew Garrison. Drew, we just had about a 20-minute prelude off-air talking about all sorts of things, reminiscing about the good and the bad of the early to mid-2000s in terms of movies. And you know what? I'm surprised that during that time, somehow we didn't change the subject to talking about the latest Invincible episode, because that had just... Invincible Season 2 Part 2 had just aired at the time of this
recording. Alan has his glow up. I told you.
So I'm very surprised we didn't get into a whole tangent about that that kept us from recording for another 45 minutes. But the point remains, how are you doing today? How are you feeling going into this retrospective?
Like, this movie is on my top 10. Like, it was my top 10 before Avengers Infinity War. Now it's like, it's like my number 2, but it's like, it's crazy. But on my New 52, you guys knew what you clicked on. It's like, Wonder Woman 2009. It's like, this movie does not get enough credit. It is amazing. It is sensational. It is the here, the now, the icon. And it really, really, really needs more people to know about it.
It is funny, though. The last few movies we've done, we've also picked movies that are on our own top 52 lists. Truman Show was on my top 52. Blade Runner 2049 is number 1 on Tristan's list. After watching it, it's in probably my top 20, easy. And with Wonder Woman 2009, I gotta admit, if I am going to be redoing my top 52, I'm not sure it makes it, but damn, I'm gonna be having a conversation with myself about it.
You know what? I can accept that, because this movie hit me at a time where it's like, I think I've told you the story on my New 52 list, but this hit teenage Drew at a time where he desperately needed this movie.
Well, not only that, we're gonna get into it real quick. We just need to get through all our prelude stuff, and then we're gonna get into the movie proper. You saw the title, people. You know the deal. Today we're talking about Wonder Woman 2009. Here is a synopsis for Wonder Woman 2009, courtesy of IMDb. Quote, a modern man's trespass of the island of the Amazons enables an imprisoned war god to escape, and Princess Diana wins the responsibility to recapture him. End quote. Here's some of the main cast for the film, along with director and writer credits. Again, this is coming from IMDb. It was directed by Lauren Montgomery. The story was done by Gail Simone and Michael Jelinek? Or Jelinek? One of the two?
I honestly don't know, if I'm being honest.
The screenplay was done by Michael Jelinek or Jelinek. I'm not sure how that's pronounced. The main cast goes as follows. Kerry Russell as Diana / Wonder Woman. Nathan Fillion as Steve Trevor. Alfred Molina as Ares. Virginia Madsen as Hippolyta, Vicki Lewis as Persephone, Rosario Dawson as Artemis, and Oliver Platt as Hades. Getting into our underrated cast / crew segment, we still need a name for that, by the way, I'm going with Andrea Romano, who is credited as the main player behind the casting process over on IMDb. Because, simply put, Drew, this is a stacked voice cast.
Mm-hmm.
Who are you going with?
Honestly, I have to give a shout-out to Gail Simone, because I haven't given her a shout-out before. It's like, yes, she wrote the story and everything, but it's like, Gail Simone is one of the most incredible comic book writers you will ever, ever meet. Seriously, she's amazing. Also, this is based off of one of my favorite Wonder Woman comic books, Gods and Mortals by George Perez. So I'll shout out him as well. But I need to shout out those two, because I realized we've been on a lot of comic book movies. I haven't done our cast call out. Name in Progress, cast call out. I haven't given it to any of the comics people behind the scenes who literally make all these stories possible.
Yeah, it's a good point. I was going to bring it up with the comic connections because I don't have a prelude here because, as has been the case for the past few weeks, this is the first time I've watched it. It's a first viewing situation for me. Regardless, Drew, since you did bring up some of the people on the comic sphere, on the comic side of things, what do you got for us in regards to comic connections?
Well, like I said, this movie is mostly based off of the comic book Gods and Mortals, written by George Perez. And if I recall correctly, which I really hope I do, because Tristan will never let me live it down if I get this wrong, but I believe the artwork was done by Greg Potter, if I recall. And I hope I'm right, because I always try to remember it by, oh, it's like Harry Potter's like uncle, non-abusive uncle. But yeah, that's really the only comic connection, because it's different from the comic, but it's also pretty faithful to the comic.
Well, that's nice, because I have another connection that I want to get into whenever we get into our longer conversation about this movie. But first off, let's give our proper review out, our general thoughts. Drew, you already kind of talked about your general thoughts. It's one of your favorite movies of all time. I think this is a damn good movie. I think it has some minor flaws. This is, what, about an hour and 13-minute movie?
Just about.
It's not overly long. There's some things that you're like, man, like, why does that little girl call her Wonder Woman at the end? Like, her getting that superhero name seemed a little forced. Like, hey, you know, I guess she's a superhero in whatever city she's in now. But, yeah, I mean, other than a few things like that, I think this is a damn good movie. I think it is a great origin story for Diana. Steve Trevor is great in this movie. The main two voice actors, Kerry Russell and Nathan Fillion, crush it. Can't wait to get to our standout performances. And I think the dynamic works between the two very well. Very similar to the 2017 film, which is the connection I wanted to get into later in greater detail, because the two movies are very similar in a lot of ways. Drew, do you have any general thoughts other than what you mentioned at the top of this podcast?
This movie is great. It's one of the greatest. Please watch it. Like, if you need to, pause this. Then go watch it, because I'm telling you, this movie is really great, and it's just a shame that this movie, like, didn't get the reception it needed to. Honestly, partially DC's fault, because
I'll tell you what. I'm sorry to interrupt you here. I'll tell you what. This movie is very similar to the 2017 movie, but the one thing I'll say, if you have not seen the 2009 Wonder Woman yet, it has a way better Ares. It's not even a competition. This version of Ares is... He could have been bad. It still would have been better than the live-action Ares we got. This is a good Ares. Mm-hmm. So, if you haven't seen this movie yet, it's got a good villain. That's my pitch to it. At the very least, it's got a good villain.
It's got a good villain. I also think it has pretty good action, too. So,
it's very... One of another flaws I have about it is that this isn't necessarily, I think, the movie's fault. I think it's just something with the times. This feels like a rated R movie that gets a little push to PG-13, and they do weird censorship things in the movie. Like, they'll show somebody get beheaded, but then they won't show somebody get stabbed. Then they'll show another person get stabbed. You know what I mean? They just make weird cuts at certain points where it's like, just show me this person getting stabbed. Why are you cutting away? Like, this is a children's animation. Like, somebody got decapitated earlier. There's blood everywhere. This is not a children's movie.
That is true. But I think that's mostly for, like, artistic stuff. Like, sometimes, like, there's one of the things with rated R where I'm like, okay, you don't need to be as gratuitous as a lot of rated R action movies need. Try to be and everything, and sometimes not seeing what happens is just as good as seeing what happens. Mm-hmm. And sometimes even better. So I think that's what they were trying to do.
Yeah, I can see that. I think it was just more so for me, just it weirdly, it was just one of those things where I would see somebody getting beheaded, and then there would be another scene where it's, that's less gratuitous than one I actually saw. So artistically, I think that's probably what had happened if it was not a censorship thing. But that's what I chalked it up to, is like, oh yeah, something with WB. They only had so many beheadings, I guess you can show in a Wonder Woman movie. There was more beheadings in this movie than I really thought there would be. It's same thing with Endgame. All right, Avengers Endgame, when I went into it, I didn't think that there'd be a beheading. But there was. Same with Wonder Woman 2009. There was multiple in this movie.
yes, there was, because Wonder Woman don't play, baby!
You'd think it was the French Revolution at a certain point in this movie, but
just with way more scantily clad women and battle armors and Greek gods.
Yeah, was Bruce Timm involved in this? I just gotta ask. Okay,
yes, that, he was involved.
You know, it's bad when I was like, yeah, Bruce Timm was involved in this. It's just
the guy's a good writer, but he can't help himself.
Yeah. He can't, but at the same time, it's just one of those things where you immediately put it on, you're like, yep, this is the same guy who made the other stuff. I can tell. How can you tell? I can just tell. All right, I'm not going into it anymore. But getting into standout performances, though, I mentioned earlier, I think this has a great villain with Ares, and I think a reason why is because you have the great Alfred Molina voicing Ares, who absolutely crushes it. I already talked about Kara Russell and Nathan Fillion as Wonder Woman and Steve Trevor, respectively. I think, again, their dynamic is fantastic. I think Virginia Madsen as Hippolyta absolutely brings it. I think Rosario Dawson, I know I exaggerate a lot on this podcast. Sometimes, and on Power Up and Game, I'll go like, oh yeah, this is the greatest ever, or this is the worst ever. Just having a conversation, all right? I understand I exaggerate a lot. I'm not exaggerating here. Artemis is genuinely one of my favorite characters in the history of DC Comics now because of this adaptation. Like, she had some one-liners.
Yeah, so the thing with Artemis in the comics is that when she originally appeared, they kind of went too far with her to where you didn't care for her. I don't know who was on the Artemis can be saved bandwagon, but they wrote her to perfection, and it shows in her adaptations. It's like, Artemis slaps, man. She is amazing.
I mean, Artemis, like, the scene where Diana goes and wins the contest, and Hippolyta's just like, all right, you won. Like, I also love that scene, too, because it shows, like, Hippolyta knew, like, oh, that's my daughter. I'm not gonna act surprised. I knew the whole freaking time. I know the way my daughter fights. So she just, like, gave her the crown and everything. And whenever she's leaving, Artemis is like, I could have stopped her. It's like, what would you have done? You couldn't have stopped her. Could have shot her in the leg. Not an artery or anything, but it would have slowed her down. And just the delivery from Rosario Dawson, just for real. Artemis nailed it. Like, she is absolutely 10 out of 10 in this film.
I don't think we've ever talked about the Ahsoka series, but when I heard that Rosario Dawson was going to be Ahsoka, this is kind of what I pictured.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Complete, like, confidence. The one-liners, like, yeah, man. And this is also not early Ahsoka that's like, ah, I don't know if this Clone Wars show's any good. But later Ahsoka, yeah.
Yeah, it's like this. That's why I was excited when it's like I saw her and it's like, oh, she's getting her own show and stuff. It's like, oh my god, it's Rosario Dawson. It's Artemis.
Yeah, and again, I thought she did a great job. Who are your standouts in this movie?
You kind of did most of my standouts, because, I mean, again, Alfred Molina. It's like, we got Doc Ock as Ares. We have Nathan Fillion as Steve Trevor. Kara Russell as Wonder Woman. Honestly, I think my favorite Wonder Woman voice.
She brings a level of, like, what Gal Gadot, I think, nailed about Diana. That, like, warrior, like, the fierce warrior. Like, I'm on a mission. I gotta do this mission. she nails that while also having like a separate, but like a separate part of that personality that is just like insanely fun. It's hard to describe. It really is. Like, her performance in this movie is fantastic.
Yeah, a lot of times DC does not give Wonder Woman her due, and I honestly think it's because Wonder Woman has not had a seminal adaptation like Batman and Superman have had since her 70s show.
Yeah, it's literally just been Wonder Woman 2017 and Wonder Woman 84. Which generally, I would say Wonder Woman 2017 is widely praised. I think the main thing is it's ending with Ares, and I think a lot of people, that's the criticism for that movie. And especially what they did with World War One, to where Ares dies, war ends, everybody's like, well, that goes against the message you're going. And then Wonder Woman 84 is far more, you know, it's far more criticized. For a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
But those are the main two. Like, you're right. There is no... Like, Batman's gotten four different incarnations with eight different actors, and Superman has... While Superman hasn't gotten a whole lot here in the past 20 years, I mean, you can go with, like, oh, Tom Welling, Brandon Routh, Christopher Reeve, Henry Cavill, like, and now David Cornsweet. So, yeah, I think you nailed it. Like, she's the member of the Trinity who doesn't get a whole lot to work with. And honestly, I really do not understand why. You would think that she would just crank out content with Wonder Woman stuff and just print money.
They could, they just haven't. And I think that's mainly because Wonder Woman requires that you need a great writer to focus on her. And honestly, I would say just put Patty Jenkins on it. She really gets Wonder Woman, and it's amazing. Do the George Perez run, because that's one of the best runs you could get. And just give her an animated series or a movie series. Don't connect it to like the DCU or the DCEU, whatever. Just give her something to allow her to shine.
Well, since you brought up Patty Jenkins and we've been kind of skirting around it, to me, there's a lot of similarities between this and the 2017 live-action Wonder Woman. Granted, the 2017 Wonder Woman took place during World War One, and this takes place in the modern time. But a lot of the same elements of Wonder Woman goes with Steve Trevor to stop Ares. A lot of the general, I guess, story beats are about the same. Mm-hmm. And I understood why if Patty Jenkins watched this movie and went like, all right, this needs to be the skeleton of what my movie is. I get it. Because this is a simple yet effective script. And you can just build on it. And that's what I think Patty Jenkins did with the first one. I think that might be a reason why when you look at 84 and a lot of people have issues with that script, that might be just... Because you had such a fantastic skeleton to where you just had to build on that and have... And that's what you pretty much had to focus on. And then you had to make something original with 84 and it just didn't work out. Hell, we see that not just to give all the blame to Patty Jenkins there for Wonder Woman 84. We saw that with something like The Flash, right? The TV show. Yep. Wasn't season one supposed to be a movie? A canceled script for a Flash movie?
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, I've done no research on this. I remember reading that years ago. But if that was the case, then yeah, like the writers on that show just had to work off that basic skeleton. And it's not a bad thing to do that either. Like, it's honestly beneficial because you just have to focus on what your incarnation of the character is going to be and build on that. You don't have to worry about the weeds of like, oh yeah, here's what the structure of the story is going to be, because that work's already been done for you. So I'm not saying this is a bad thing. I'm saying this as a really good thing, that this was the precursor to probably the second or best thing the DCEU has put out.
Yeah, pretty much.
What are your thoughts on the similarities?
Like, I've mentioned this in the Wonder Woman 2017 movie, but it's like, it was, like I said, just flat out, like they just copied 2009. And I don't remember if I said it in the review and everything, but I said they almost surpassed it if it wasn't for that ending. So it's like my feelings on it have been there from the start and everything. And it's like, honestly, I still think 2017 was really good. I just think it betrayed what it was trying to say in the messaging. Whereas in Wonder Woman 2009, it's like they have something that they're trying to say and they make it very well known. It's a part of the plot and everything, and even character development of what they're trying to say. It's like both men and women have problems. That doesn't make one superior to the other, and both can learn to coexist and communicate a bit better. And Wonder Woman gets to be the bridge, but she also has Steve Trevor who helps her be a bridge. It's like, it's really cool, it's really dynamic, and I like it. Whereas in 2017, they changed it to where humanity has flaws. They made it more overall,
yeah,
which I like.
I think that's good, too. The problem with 2017 and what I was alluding to with the end of, it basically ends the war, is there's a point in, I'm spoiling Wonder Woman 2017, so if you haven't seen it, I'm sorry. But there's a point in Wonder Woman 2017 where she kills who she thinks is Ares, and the war continues, and she basically comes to this realization that killing one person isn't going to solve humanity's problems, that humanity is deeply flawed, that we have evil inside of us, to which Steve Trevor gives a fantastic speech, pretty much going, yeah, we suck. I'm sorry, I got nothing to tell you. But we're not that bad. Like, we're complicated, all right? There's a lot of good parts of us, too. And not all of us are evil. So, it was a very well-done message to being like, yeah, humanity, we're deeply flawed, but we are worth saving. We're worth continuing to strive to be better. The end of the movie basically just goes, nah, Ares has just been stoking the flames and Wonder Woman kills him. And then the war stops. It just weirdly goes against the message that I think everybody was buying into at that point.
Yeah. And honestly, last point I'm going to say about 2017, because I really do want to get 2009. But honestly, the irony that would have been the reveal that Ares was not only the British guy this whole time, but was trying to stop the war, would have been an amazing twist that they could have kept on. It's like, oh yeah, Diana, I'm Ares. It's like how amazing would that be? Like, she figures out that he's Ares and he's trying to stop the war, and everything that she thought she knew about the world again is like just rewritten in her head.
Now, I don't know what the ending could have been for that. I'm not sure what you could have done for the final third act. And so, all that is still up in the air, even if you go with, hey, let's go with the original message and not have Ares be behind it all. But man, I do think you look back at that movie and you just go, man, that's something, honestly, you look into superhero space, where there's so many movies that just try to copy each other, and the blue beams in the sky, and the quippy heroes. There's something really damn original about not having a supervillain at the end, and maybe tease Ares for the sequel instead. Like, there's something really cool about that to me, and I don't know, maybe that's just me, maybe people listening, you go like, no, they needed something, this is a superhero movie, so please let us know your thoughts in the comments. But yeah, that's my main flaw with that movie. In 2009, it doesn't ever veer in that territory, because there's no active war going on at the time that Diana's like, oh, this is the problem. They're not trying to stop anything other than Ares. So I think it flows a lot better because of that reason. This is just, we gotta stop Ares. Ares is trying to take over. He's trying to cause chaos. We gotta stop him before he does that. Very to the point. I think it really works. But getting back to 2009 as a whole, I think we can quickly get through this. The visuals, it's very in line with the DC AU,
which are fantastic. I think it's like a more... Yeah, I think it's like a less angular DCAU where they're allowed to have like curves and the movements are a bit more fluid and everything. Like it's an updated DCAU look. And yes, Diana looks very different, but it's because it's a different art style, guys. Like it's similar animation, different art style.
I think the animation's very good in this movie. I really liked a lot of the fights in this movie. I think the score for... I don't really remember a lot from the score, so I can't really speak a whole lot to that. Even though I just saw the movie, I guess that's something I would say is average for me, because I just didn't remember it. Maybe that's something on a rewatch that I'll catch. But the animation itself I thought was really good. We'll get into the fight scenes later. What are your general thoughts on this? And then we can go into some of the finer details of this movie that I'm dying to get into.
So like I said, the animation is pretty good. I love the character designs. Like these characters were designed for this art style, and you can tell because all of them pop in their own unique way. Hippolyta wears purple for royalty, but it's more muted because you see like she's gotten sort of depressed with her life, and it's not the fact that she is ungrateful for what she has. She loves Wonder Woman, she loves her people, all that stuff, but it's like you can tell like she's yearning for more. Then you have Artemis, who is exceptional in her colors because she's bright red, she pops, she has anger, she's a warrior, but she's passionate as well. Her red is mostly passion and everything. And Wonder Woman is like this bright beacon where she wears mostly white throughout the entire thing before she gets her Wonder Woman costume, where she's like purity and everything because she doesn't know any better yet. But she does understand more than she lets on. It's like, I guess the way it's like she's innocent, she's not ignorant. So that, yeah. It's like, I just love it. It's great visual storytelling.
I want to address this feeling of epicness that this movie has. From the jump, you get into this fight with Hippolyta and Amazons versus Ares and his army. And there's just this feeling of just this Greek mythology epicness to it. Now, is it entirely, you know, on track with Greek mythology? Nah.
Heck no.
Except for Zeus doing nothing. Like, yeah. That was actually on point. I do appreciate that. But between Persephone and Hades and Ares, like all that, not as much in the Greek mythology from what I do know about it.
Especially with Ares and Hades having a few different personalities. Like Ares likes war. He doesn't go to start war. Like that's a thing I think that is mostly modern Hollywood. If you read Greek mythology, Ares actually like followed the rules of war, which it's hinted at that he made. And then there's also Hades, who does not look like that.
With Zeus, how it was said, like, Ares is my favorite son. I'm like, no.
No, he is not. It's like I don't care what telling you of Greek mythology you're listening to. It's like Zeus hates Ares. He either hates him because Ares is potentially more powerful than him,
he's just a constant fuck up. And it's kind of honestly funny in the stories of Greek mythology, just how this god constantly messes things up.
And then he scores a bad hit like Aphrodite. Now, it is like theorized that because most of our Greek mythology comes from Athenian sources, that it's just the Athenians trying to dog on Sparta's main god, Ares.
Mm-hmm.
But I still like it as just with that context and everything.
Yeah, it's fun to know like the different interpretations and being like, oh yeah, this is different. And obviously it's going to be like Thor and Loki and Marvel aren't like that Norse mythology in the slightest. Yeah. So it's going to be different, but it is just funny to look at the changes that they made for this. And also some of the similarities, like Zeus just fucking off the entire movie and you're like, yeah, you know, that tracks. At least they didn't have to be a heroic figure in this thing. But, overall, though, there's just this feeling of epicness, especially in the battles, to where it's just like, oh, these are Greek gods fighting each other. It feels like it.
It's like that opening battle, like, just pulls you in immediately. Oh, it's so good. It's so good. And I also like the direct parallel they made, even though I do feel a bit bad for Ares in the beginning. It's like I know Hippolyta don't play, but it's like not even a look at, oh, that was her son.
Yeah, man, I agree. I think it really sets Hippolyta up from the start to be this fierce warrior, kind of what we would see from Diana later. You can kind of see Apple doesn't fall from the tree with the two characters.
Is it a golden apple?
It is. As good as they are, yeah, it's a golden apple. And then you could also see, like, the origin of Diana in this movie. Like, a lot of people, when Wonder Woman came out, including yourself, by the way, Drew, I think you're on record saying you weren't a big fan of Zeus being Diana's father.
I am not, because it really just makes her a demigod.
And I gotta say, there's something about her being molded from the earth that I kind of like. Because I was one of those people where I was like, no, you know what, make her a demigod. I'm down with this. Make her part of the gods. It makes her feel even more important to the whole Greek mythology story. But after just seeing the beginning there and just having like, oh, you will be rewarded a child, and she molds the child in that ritual she does. And there's something about that that's like, oh man, this feels like a Greek myth.
Yeah, it's like a lot. It's like, and also the fact that it comes from just a wish of just wanting to have children, and how that plays into the ending and everything. It's like that.
Yeah, it plays into her character development.
Mm-hmm. It's just, it's so good. I can't wait to talk about it. But yeah, like you said, I wasn't a fan because it just made her a demigod. And it, like, take away the uniqueness of her story and everything, allowing her to be made from clay and everything. And also, and this is, like, a small little nitpick, but I get, like, some authors will change it and everything. Diana, like, is just born a regular Amazon. She doesn't have powers or anything. And in the beginning when she's a child, it's as she grows up that she starts proving her worth. She starts proving her mettle and everything. And then she becomes Wonder Woman. She earns, like, boons from the gods. And that's how she gains, like, the ability to fly and everything. It's like, mm-hmm. It just gives Wonder Woman something that she worked for her powers and abilities. It's like, she's not someone born with those powers and abilities.
But I do agree. And I wanted to bring up this whole feeling of epicness first, in regards to talking about the story of this movie, because I think you just see it throughout. And a lot of the action scenes, like I mentioned earlier, share that feeling. A lot of also what we see in Themyscira as well, the chase with Steve Trevor, I think give off that feeling. And just a lot of just the mythos of Wonder Woman gives off that I think, and I don't mean to keep going back to the 2017 one, but it's kind of what you were saying. We don't have a whole lot to compare it to in terms of media. So yeah. I find myself going back and looking at the 2017 version. And while I really like that adaptation, it's a great movie. That's something I do wish it had a little more of. There is a feeling in that movie where you go like, oh yeah, now this becomes a war movie. When it could, you know, have a little bit of, and it could have an injection of what I think this movie had, which was, all right, shit's about to get wild. About to have an insane fight.
You see why I love this movie. It's like I can feel it in your dialogue and everything. It's like, you know, it's fantastic, why I love movie. This movie.
And I think another reason this movie's fantastic is because of Wonder Woman, Steve Trevor, and their relationship. Because it's one of those things where Steve Trevor is the womanizer kind of protagonist character that you've seen countless times in movies and television. But like a lot of those characters, you know, he does have a heart of gold. He actually does care about people. He is a lot of the good and bad in humanity at the same time. Something that Wonder Woman, like, that's her whole arc, is she's only seeing one side of things, refusing to see the other. and her whole arc is about learning to see the flaws, but the potential and what also humanity does well. And that's something, again, I'm sorry to keep going, but the 2017 version does it very well too. So props to both versions there, because I think they absolutely nailed that character arc in both versions of Wonder Woman, Steve Trevor. I think both are absolutely fantastic.
Agreed. I also think the biggest thing with Steve Trevor in it is that, well, it's like a lot of times in Hollywood and everything, the one thing is like, oh, you make the womanizing character. It's like, if he's not the person you want to be, he's the person who gets shat on. And it's like, you don't listen to him, doesn't do anything in the stuff either. It's like, he's just kind of the annoyance in the movie that you're trying to get over. And like, they're trying to like pull a message in between. With Steve Trevor here, it's like, no, he has stuff to learn, but he also teaches Diana some stuff too. It's like they don't just write him off. They show why he's important to the story.
And another thing too, and I feel like in a movie like this and what they want to do with Steve Trevor, you run the risk of doing what the canceled Joss Whedon Wonder Woman movie was going to do and make Steve Trevor the protagonist in a Wonder Woman project. Thank God that didn't happen. But what this movie does so well is it...
Okay, hold on, Taylor. I gotta say this. You're good. What is with Hollywood making movies where the main character isn't the main character in their movie?
Oh, yeah, this would actually happen later on in so many different projects, but you do think about it just like, yeah, Joss Whedon was apparently going to do a Wonder Woman movie where Steve Trevor was a dick and he was also the main character. It's like, wait a minute. So he wasn't even likable and he was going to be, okay, that seemed like a recipe for success.
Thanks, good job, Whedon. Joss,
on that one.
I don't get it. He made Buffy the Vampire Slayer. That is very close to getting to Wonder Woman. How do you mess that up?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I was just trying to make a little jab there at that canceled film. But the reason why I bring that up is because I think you run the risk if you do a lot here with your secondary main character. And hell, we see in the MCU, too. Like, you just mentioned that there's so many movies and shows, and I think that's what you're alluding to, is like, hey, this movie is about so-and-so. Why is it that so-and-so is the secondary main character in this movie?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not naming names because I don't feel like getting into a whole MCU debate here. But
I would, but also I also don't want to get into it. I'm here for Wonder Woman.
Yeah, exactly. So I think you run that risk if you really expand on Steve Trevor in that way, but I think the movie does such a great job at conveying, like, no, Steve Trevor is the second main character of this movie. He's complicated. Yeah, he's a womanizer, but man, he's also very competent, and he cares. Like, this is a fully fleshed out character. Even with all that said, he is not the main character. The main character is Diana. It is clear as day. The movie never shies away from that. And it thrives because of that reason. Because the movie, really, at the end of the day, is all about Diana's character arc of learning to accept man.
Not like man as in, like, humanity. We mean, like, man as in man.
Like, yeah, in this movie, it is actually man, like, in that sense. It's not mankind like in the 2017 one. But generally, it's the same idea. Like, I get why Patty Jenkins did that in 2017. It was like, basically, Patty Jenkins just expanded upon the idea. It was like, you know what? Let's just open up to all humanity. Because we all suck. Sometimes.
She said it, not me.
Hey, man, it's not bad.
Like, it's not a bad thing. We need to be critical on ourselves. So, yeah, it's not a bad thing.
That's why you also say sometimes. Not all the time, just sometimes. But besides the point. That's what I'm saying. Like, she is the main character. She is the focus. And I think the movie thrives with that.
So, I've been holding it in. Can we talk about Ares?
Yes. What do you have to say about this great villain that's so much better than the guy with the mustache?
This Ares is so good. This is, like, one of the best Ares in really any adaptation that we've been getting, period. Because most of the time, if we get Ares, he's a jobber. It's like, yes, we know he's one of the punching bags of Greek mythology. He's still the god of freaking war. There should be some titanicness about Ares, and this Ares gets it. It's like, yes, it is very much assisted by Doc Ock and his incredible voice, and the fact that he is cheesing it up throughout the entire movie. I love when he's like calling down the elements and talking about the different powers he now has that rivals his family's. It's like, I can call down lightning like my father. I'm as fast as Hermes. It's like, Jesus. It's like, just quote Shakespeare, why don't you?
One of my favorite moments in this movie is when he's about to get... I've said the word beheaded far more times on this podcast than I thought I would. When he's about to get beheaded by Diana. There's a lot of beheadings, man. There is. There really is. But yeah. Whenever Diana's about to kill him, at the last second, he realizes he is fucked. And he calls out for Zeus one last time. And no response. That moment's so good. Because it shows at the end of the day, this man could not accept his own death. Like, he was like, no, just any kind of way to get out of this. There's no noble warrior death for him. Because he is not a noble warrior. This is a fucking cowardly piece of shit. That can, yeah, he's the god of war.
Yeah, it's a little bit ironic because in the comics he is very much that, but he's also he is like kind of a noble warrior, but at the same time he's also so powerful that his nobility only extends to like the gods and those that the gods acknowledge, so like Wonder Woman and stuff. It's kind of refreshing to see like an Ares kind of brought down in this one, because sometimes in the comics that guy needs to be beaten up a bit more than Diana is able to. It's like he gets off a little too scot-free because of how powerful he is.
I also thought the relationship between him and Persephone was really interesting. Because on one hand, Persephone thought of it as... like, I don't think the movie ever explains it to the audience. Like, oh, here's what it is. To me, it had a little bit of Joker Harley vibes. A little bit. Not a whole lot. But in the sense that, like, one side of the relationship is caring a lot more than the other. And the other is... yeah, it's not good. It's not good at all.
Yeah, it's like, I honestly do... That is one of the things I wish we had a bit more of. Because it does feel like that. Because you can tell she still has some reservations about betraying her people. And all that, which is, of course... understandable and everything, but at the same time it's like every time you think Ares is about to backstab her and everything, he doesn't. He actually does care for her. He actually does care for her in some way, but it's like, how far does that go?
Yeah, I think that makes it more interesting too, because I thought he was gonna betray her whenever they got to that sanctuary
and he asked for the dagger.
Yeah, and I was like, oh god, here it comes. And he doesn't. And then she just gets left there at the, where I think it's right before he goes to meet Hades, which.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like, it's also because like, he knows, like, if he takes her in, it's like, he can't, not only can he not protect her, but it's like, it'll be like, she can be used against him as well and everything. It's like, there's a lot of nuances to this. I like the nuance that they put in just these simple interactions.
It's a lot of potential nuance, I'll say that, because it gives, like, the audience, the viewer, a feeling of, when's he gonna betray her? Does he even give a damn at all about her? And you don't think she really, or he does a whole lot, especially compared to how Persephone feels about Ares. But at the same time, you're waiting for that heel turn, essentially, that doesn't come. So at the end of the day, you're like, man, what was that relationship like? When would he have betrayed her? When was she no longer useful to him?
Maybe he would have done the same thing with Hippolyta, wait till he has a kid.
I don't know. Either way, I thought the relationship was very compelling. And because of that same reason, what you were saying is like, you're just waiting for that turn and it never happens. And I think that makes Persephone a better character too throughout the whole thing. Yeah. Because if she had just gotten killed off, it would have been like, ah, yeah, whatever, she's there. But because she makes it all the way to the ending fight, yeah, I think it elevates the character a bit.
And that ending fight, ooh.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic. Ooh,
like, her fighting Hippolyta, it's like both of them have reason to dislike the other. But you're not fully aware of Persephone until just at that moment when she gets stabbed. And, like, Hippolyta talking about how she gave her sanctuary and everything, but then Persephone holding her and saying, but you also denied us families and children. Yes, we are warriors, Hippolyta, but we are also women.
It really drives home, I think, Hippolyta's character arc throughout the movie, too, where she's a background character, pretty much, in this film. But she even goes through an arc of being like, no, I've given my people, like you said, sanctuary. I've given them a chance at life. And realizing at the end, and through also stuff that we hear, like, with Steve Trevor going like, hey, you know what, Diana, you're right, we suck. But also, you guys aren't so perfect yourself. Like, you guys have stayed hidden for so long. Think about what you could have done to fix the problems or help us out. And I think you've seen, like, this done on a lot larger scale with the obvious answer. As soon as I said that story beat, I assume a lot of people, including yourself, Drew, just thought, oh, Black Panther. Because that's the whole point of Wakanda, Black Panther. Yeah, there's a reason why people found that story beat so compelling, because it's a damn good point. Like, that's the thing where people walked out of the theater with Black Panther, and they're like, man, yeah, Killmonger did some fucked up stuff. Yeah, yeah, good point. Like, what the hell is Wakanda doing?
It's like, hey, you have all this power and ability.
Let's talk about the other Amazons, meaning like Hippolyta, Artemis, Alexa. I really like the relationship too between Diana and Alexa, because being in the movie, Alexa is shown to be not a warrior, and she is pretty much put down by all of her peers because of that reason, Artemis especially. But you do see at the beginning of the movie, like, Diana and Alexa, they're very close. Like, there is a kinship there that even though, like, she is not a warrior, Diana respects her. I don't know. I think that's where I think it shows to the audience at the very beginning, like, oh, okay, so Diana's different than the other Amazons.
Yeah, she has that. There's nuance to her.
You can see the humanity there. Like, she's somebody who will reach out to help somebody.
Yeah, there's a nuance to her that feels really, that feels real, and it doesn't feel like she's faking or anything. It's like you understand that she has a connection with all the Amazons and everything, but each connection to her is special, and she doesn't look down on anyone, which is pretty cool. And also something that you see her start to do the more she is in man's world.
Yeah. And I think you also hit a nail on the head when talking about, like, she has different, like, dynamics and relationships with the other main Amazons. With Hippolyta, yeah, it's the mother-daughter dynamic. And with Artemis, it's more like teacher-student, to where Artemis is just like, man, if you were not the queen's daughter, I would fuck you up.
See, for me, that feels more like big sister energy. See, I feel like, yes, she is like, Diana's the youngest sibling, that's the oldest sibling, that's Artemis. And it's like, oh, I would, but mom would kill me if I even put a scratch on you.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying, like, I think you hit nail on the head by going, the writing of this movie, I think it was so good, and I think that's an example of it. Because there's a version of this to where some of the characters come across as wooden, or Diana just interacts with all the Amazons the same way. Like that, yes, sister, we are together in battle kind of feeling. You know what I'm talking about? Like, it's that general, for the Amazonians and that kind of stuff. To whereas instead, they actually feel like just fleshed out characters. Each have their own relationship with the other. It's like these are actual people. Yeah, like, they're actual people. Like, it's a crazy concept. I know. And that just doesn't stop with Amazonians. You go to Steve Trevor. You go to even the stuff at the beginning with Steve Trevor, by the way, that we didn't fully get into, where Steve Trevor basically, like, when he's talking with Diana, and Diana goes, like, you only saved me because I'm a woman. And he goes, like, no, I didn't save you just because you're a woman. I saved you because I care about you. And the audience knows that is the reason why Steve Trevor did this. Because the beginning of the movie, when he's crashing, he tries to save his male flying partner. He couldn't save the rookie, because she got blown up very quickly. But he does try to save his teammate at the beginning. So it establishes to the audience, like, no, he cares about people. He wants to save people. So this isn't just, oh, because the damsel in distress thing. It's done so because he cares about Diana. So, yeah, even going back to that, like, this movie does such a great job at just, with an hour and 13 minutes, establishing so many characters, giving them personalities, and giving each of them some kind of dynamic with every character. Going to Steve Trevor and the Amazons, too. Like, each of the Amazons that interact with them have a different vibe about it. Like, Hippolyta kind of less murdery, I would say.
Yeah, she's more
compared to Artemis.
She's more, it's like, yeah, it's like Hippolyta more or less is just like, okay, there's a strange man who somehow got onto my island. It's like, in a way, she is like, this is like different from how the many times like they've, I want to give an amount like a years and everything, because I've been there since Greek mythology, so it has to be like a few millennia and stuff, but it's like, I'm not sure how many thousands of years they've been there, but it's like, it's different, and she's just trying to still be a queen, but you can tell that there's some interest in there and everything. And then Steve just trying to, like, not mention what the idioms he's saying and everything, like, when he says, I don't have to take this crap, and then everyone's confused, like, okay, what is crap? And he's like, oh, please forget about that, and they use the lasso on him. It says, it's shit, okay? It's poop.
That's another thing, too. When I was talking about the weird, like, censorship of the blood, that's one where I thought it was going to be, I don't have to put up with this shit. Wait, what? What is this idiom? And it explains it. Instead, they changed it to crap. I don't know. It's stuff like that where I'm like, man.
Well, crap was used more than shit back in the O's.
Yeah. I guess so. But still, it was just one of those things where I thought, like, oh, they were going for a curse word there, but then they changed it because they're like, man, you can get more kids to watch this so we don't say the word shit, because it's 2009 and kids don't ever hear anything bad on the internet.
Oh no, the internet is just a soft, safe place for all the children.
God. 2009 was a simpler time, wasn't it? For the internet. What a time.
What a
YouTube
time to be alive.
YouTube was just starting to become a thing. It was right before the boom of the Twitters and Instagrams. Man.
Facebook was still like one of the only two social media sites.
That MySpace still. It was dying out, I think, at that time. But man, it was dying a slow death. Just sweet summer children we were. Had no idea of the hellscape that we are now in on in the internet age. But besides the point, getting away from another 45-minute tangent. Yeah, again, going with the Steve Trevor and the Amazon dynamics, I thought that was really well done, too. And I've talked about Artemis, genuinely one of my favorite characters in DC now. Hippolyta, really liked her character. But Alexa, I think, to me, is the underrated MVP of this movie. Even though she's dead for the majority of it.
Hey, if it wasn't for her, we'd still be dealing with undead Amazons.
Which was so... Going back to the epicness. Which was so fucking epic. Dead, zombified Amazonians? Oh, come on, man. Tell me you don't want to see that in live action.
I do want to see that in live action. I want to so much.
I know zombies are played out, people, but for real, it's on the White House lawn. Was it the White House? I think it was the White House.
Yeah, it was the White House.
Yeah, it was on the White House lawn. They were having an epic Greek battle where Ares summoned the undead Amazonians that have died along the way. one of the zombie Amazonians kills a living one, falls to the ground, and she becomes a zombie, gets back. Oh, fuck, it's so cool.
Yeah, also, shows just how petty he is. As he said that it really just does. Is a giant F you to Hippolyta.
It gives the same feeling that when you were watching Doctor Strange in Multiverse of Madness. No, that movie has a lot of different... A lot of people feel a lot of things about that movie. But one thing I think that is probably widely praised from it, whenever Strange just takes that cape of the damned, it's just, it feels like that metal epic moment.
Mm-hmm.
Same vibe here. You're just like, yeah, fuck yeah, inject this in my veins. I am feeling this movie. Go with it.
Like that, it's just so good. It's like there are so many great moments. Also, like you were saying, Alex.
Good.
Yeah, we didn't talk about Alexi's MVP moment, where literally she, in zombified state, she has the willpower and knowledge to fix the situation where it's like she's telling Artemis the spell of how to reverse Ares' control over them. It's like, that is, it's like, what a great way of bringing a character back who was killed unceremoniously and then gets to have her heroic moment.
Not only that, I think it might lead into, this is after the fact, me thinking about her story a little more. The whole time she seems a little, I don't want to say cowardly is the word. She seems just scared. Scared to fight. And the reason why is I think she's just scared of death. I think she's scared to die. Whenever she is turned again and she's with Artemis and she's like, you know what? Now I'm a warrior. I'm an Amazonian. She picks up the sword and she's about to charge. And I think the implication there she's is leading now that the she's charge. Dead, she has nothing to fear. Yeah, she's leading the charge. But now that she's dead, she has nothing to fear.
Yeah. It's like, that's one of the things, I have mixed feelings on Ares just taking them out. It's sad because it's like, that was another moment where it's like, oh yeah, they can charge at Ares and everything. But it's like, I have mixed feelings because, one, we don't really need Alexi having that moment where it's like, yes, she's a warrior now, and that's fine. But she solved it with skills that none of the other Amazons possess because she likes to enrich her mind. But then but at the same time, it's like, dang, it's like, that's an epic charge moment, everything. It's like, again, smart move on Ares that he literally remembers, oh yeah, I brought them here, I can just take them back. It's also like still so sad because it's like, dang, that was her moment. That was her time to shine again.
On one hand, the only thing I don't like about that scene is we don't get a moment between Alexa and Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Considering their relationship earlier in the movie. But on the other hand, why I think it really works is, man, it makes Ares look like a prick.
Guy is just a straight bastard.
It goes to the audience, like, it seems like not even a shot. It's a shot to the Amazonians for sure, but it also feels like a shot to the audience because it's another great moment. Like I've been talking about the whole movie, I've been using the word epic so many times along with beheading, but it was another epic moment.
Epic, like, beheading.
Oh, man, she's gonna lead this army into battle, and then Ares just goes, no, you're not, and just snap of fingers, pretty much kills them all again. It just feels like a deflating moment for the audience. To where you're like, man, that was cool. Fuck you, Ares.
Just makes you hate him even more.
Yeah, it worked. That's why I think the scene really works. While we don't get the Wonder Woman bit, which is unfortunate, it really works because it's deflating, not just for the Amazonians, but it's just that moment for the audience, especially, like, for me especially, where I was just like, man, fuck you, man.
It's like, I'm glad Diana epically decapitates you. You didn't say decapitate. I'm glad Diana epically beheads you.
Before we get into, we kind of been talking about the ending. You got anything to add about the ending?
Steve Trevor literally trying to stop a nuke and then realizing, oh, Invisible missiles.
Yeah, that was good. They need to give her an invisible jet in live action. Hopefully that's what James Gunn does. It's stupid, but man, you know what? James Gunn thrives on making stupid stuff awesome.
Honestly, I don't see how an invisible jet is not epic. Like, it's an invisible jet. Don't get me wrong,
it is. But also, you gotta also, look, I've at least hoped to always be the guy who looks, I try to look at things through the diehard lens and the casual lens. And be like, hey, does this work for both? In the diehard lens, and the Drew and Tristan comic book experts, you're 100% right. I see where you're coming from. I actually agree with you. Through the casual lens, the invisible jet is kind of stupid. It makes little sense, no explanation behind it. But man, if you're telling me there is somebody out there in the Hollywood space that could be like, hey, you know what? Diehards, I get you. You're right. I'm going to convince the casual audience that you're right. We're giving Wonder Woman the invisible jet. I'm trusting James Gunn with that.
I trust James Gunn with it, and like I said, it's an invisible jet. I don't know how it cannot be cool. The only way you can make it not cool is do what the Super Friends did and just have it.
That is why people think it's stupid, Drew. That is why.
Okay, but the Super Friends also made Aquaman stupid.
I know, and then we got Jason Momoa, and he's cool as shit now.
Yeah, but Super Friends made everything stupid. It's like, let's be real here. They didn't give Darkseid boom tubes. They gave him star-shaped doorways.
I didn't remember that. I blocked that out.
Okay. Final thing to talk about before we get into our final thoughts. Diana. I'm just gonna say it, make this quick and simple, because we've been at it for a while. Like, this is probably, like, the second best Diana that's been put to screen. And this is, and the only one that kind of puts her down is literally the DCAU, where she has episodes on episodes of character growth and development. It's not fair. So, like, this one is amazing. I love this Diana.
I would actually agree with that. 100% I'd co-sign it. Let's go ahead and get out of here, Drew. What are your favorite and least favorite moments from Wonder Woman 2009, along with your final thoughts?
Favorite moments. Wonder Woman fighting against Demios. We didn't get to talk about that much, but that was a really cool fight scene. I liked how she used the heels that she hated as weapons. That was awesome. I like how hardcore Demios is in this scene. It's like, oh, he doesn't accept the lasso of truth being used on him. He just immediately poisons himself, and somehow, instead of, like, dying, he just turns to dust. But, you know, other Greek mythology creatures have similar quirks, so I'll accept it. Other favorite moment. Diana versus Ares. The whole fight. It's amazing from start to finish. Least favorite scene, none, because I like it all. It's like there isn't, it's like the movie is honestly so good with its pacing, there's not any room for it to, like, have a point where it just sucks it or just linger or just lingers too long and everything. It knew how to pace itself. I like it all. It's amazing.
I agree with you. I think this movie is fantastic. I love a lot of honestly, the entire cast absolutely crushes it. But from Nathan Fillion, Kerry Russell, Rosario Dawson, Alfred Molina as Ares. I don't really think we talked about Alfred Molina's performance enough. Like, we talked about Kerry Russell, especially as Wonder Woman, which, as we said, she just brings out this multifaceted personality in Wonder Woman that is just outstanding. Rosario Dawson as Artemis. Could not give enough praise to Artemis in this movie, for real. But Ares was so well portrayed in this just cold, calculating. This is Doc Ock. The guy who played Doc Ock is voice acting Ares. You know how this goes. If you haven't seen the movie, you're just listening to this, you already know what his performance is like.
It's like, honestly, watch the movie just to see him voice act Ares. It's like, it is literally like just something that'll stick with you.
And not only that, there's a moment with Alfred Molina's Ares in this movie where he is a complete shitbag the entire time. But whenever he sees Hades, and then Hades is like, slave, come here. And then it turns out that the slave is Ares' son. And it's a brief moment where you actually feel bad for Ares. A brief moment that then quickly goes away. Very well done. And then we see what becomes of Ares at the end of the movie that we'll never get a... We'll never figure out where they're going to go with that, but...
Maybe it's best we don't know.
Well, that's good. That really seemed like that's something in the comics that does not work out, so... Maybe for the best.
Yeah, this Hades is more like Dionysus, and I do not want to know what Dionysus is going to do with Ares and his son.
But overall, it's a fantastic movie. I only have... Like, my flaws with it are mostly because it is an hour 13, and because it's an hour 13, it's one of those things to where you have to cut some corners, as you would. Like, there's nothing you can really do in that time span to build a little more, like Wonder Woman getting her name. Because, again, that really feels like it comes out of friggin' nowhere at the end, because it's just that little girl who Diana teaches how to fight, who goes like, oh, it's Wonder Woman. I'm like, how do you know that? But overall, it's a fantastic movie. Great recommendation, Drew. Let's go ahead and get out of here
properly.
Wait,
hold on. Can I do one more favorite moment? Because you didn't really go over favorite moments, so I want to do one more.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Wonder Woman teaches a little girl how to bludgeon her playmates.
Yeah, that was really funny. That's that kind of moment where... We see, was it Justice League? It might have been Zack Snyder's Justice League, where she, like, the little girl's like, can I be like you? She's like, yeah, you can. Which, on one hand, very inspiring. Good job. That's, like, you nailed Wonder Woman there. Like, that was a great adaptation. But on the other hand, she just murdered a whole lot of people. And there's no way that little girl can grow up to be a Wonder Woman.
Yeah, it's like, Diana, did you forget that you are also
a demigod? Like, to me, it's the equivalent of, like, Shaquille O'Neal telling somebody, like, you could be like me when you grow up. No,
I can be a giant like you.
You're not going to be like Shaquille O'Neal. It's a little irresponsible there, Shaq. But besides the point, man, that's a great favorite moment. Really, just to talk about least and favorite moments, this whole movie's just great, man. That's why I think I just glossed over it and started talking about final thoughts. It's just a really fast-paced, easy breeze of a film. At the very least, I think this is something that you can watch. When you're done, you're going to be like, yeah, it was good, and move on with your life. At the very least. It's not something that like, takes up 2.5 hours, and by the end you're like, why did I even invest any time into this? But I think this was a great movie and well worth your recommendation, man. So let's get out of here proper and talk about what we're working on and where the people can find us. Drew, what you're working on and where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at DrewGarrison_. I am posting regularly now. Holy crap, guys. I know it took forever. I am also right here on the Nerds Talk Movies, but you can also find me on Long Box Hunters, where me and Tristan can have long tangents, but instead of movies, it's comic books. Ooh. By the way, just a little shout out. We did a Wonder Woman recording. I don't know if it's out yet, but you guys should check that one out.
Hold on. When is this? Yeah, it should be out. This is actually going to coincidentally plan out to where your Long Box Hunters episode on Wonder Woman is going to come out, and then I think a few days later, this episode will drop.
Oh my god, Taylor, keep this part in. Guys, it's the perfect coincidence. is the perfect coincidence. Wonder Woman 2009. And then we have Wonder Woman Hippolyta comic book review. And it's one of our best ones, I think. So please check it out.
Oh, I'm definitely keeping this part in, by the way, because I don't want anybody to think that we actually planned this out, because we are idiots. Mainly me. And I don't
planning plan a strategy?
Out. We're currently trying to figure out when the hell we're going to record Invincible Season 2 Part 2. Because I forgot that was coming back. Because they took a 2-month break. And then shame immediately upon the first episode, I was like, shit, that wasn't on the schedule. 3 months.
It's like, I honestly think it was more. It's like, we're in March, man. I think it ended in November. That's 4.
Dude, time has no meaning to me anymore. I honestly, at this point, I don't know how old I am. I really don't. Like, I would have to think about it.
You're 119.
One day at a time. That's all I'm living by.
But Taylor, where can we find you?
Well, you can find me in our Discord, the link for which is in the description of this very episode. If you enjoyed whatever this was, you can find other content over at the Nerd Sesh Network via the Long Box Hunters, which comes out on the last Friday of every month. Or weekly, we have a gaming news podcast called Power Up and Game, where, as I just said, we talk about some of the most trending stories around the gaming industry. I want to thank Drew for joining me. I want to thank anyone for listening in. We will be back next week with a brand new episode. See you then.